You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm Victor, and joining me is William Gallagher.
The ever so slightly impoverished more every week because of you, William Gallagher. Hello, yes.
And I'm so happy to have you here because this is the week where absolutely nothing happened.
Well, I'm down more money because of you. Let's just put that hint out there yet again.
What did I make you buy this time?
Well, previously on Apple Insider Podcast, you encouraged me to buy AirPods Pro, and I did this. It was very expensive. And then I said to you last week, don't make me buy a new iPhone. And what did you do?
So, William, I'm not quite sure how you being both gullible and easily manipulated is necessarily my fault.
I question the word gullible. can be inspired in a financially dubious direction. I was actually looking into the trading things because I realised, perhaps everybody else says this, but I didn't. I don't know what the process was and what happens. So I was looking into it and I thought, actually, I can make these numbers work. With a trade-in, I can go up from an iPhone XS Max to an iPhone 11 Pro. And there were reasons I wanted to do that, so I did it. So you were the spark that led down this road.
Well, I hope you're happy.
I think I am. I'm just dreading you talking about the new MacBook Pro.
Well, then, in that case, we should probably talk about it.
La, la, la. It does look great, though, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. First of all, what's new about this thing? What's the most important change that could possibly have happened here?
Oh, I'm torn now between the keyboard and the screen. How do I pick?
What's new about the keyboard?
It's a new keyboard.
It's an old keyboard.
A completely new system. Yeah, they're calling it the magic keyboard, but it isn't the magic keyboard. It's kind of sort of a bit kind of ish.
Well, okay, wait. That. So why would they call it the magic keyboard? What's the other magic keyboard in the product line?
The one right in front of me that came with my iMac and that I'm still using today with my Mac Mini. They, I do think, really brilliant Apple magic keyboard.
Wireless. Right, which is the wireless low-profile keyboard that has a scissor-type switch as opposed to the butterfly-type switch.
Yes, I've worn out the S key on them, but only the surface. It's still S.
Right, you wore the label off as opposed to the...
Yes.
Right.
Yes, it took quite hard work, but
which
I
is,
did it.
Which is also weird that that happens. That happens a lot on the iPad Pro keyboard. The labels were off the keys.
All right. Not very keen on the iPad Pro keyboard. You mean the Apple's own?
Yes.
One. I'm not particularly keen on the feel of it, but, you know.
Okay, so for everyone who hasn't heard, on Wednesday, after months of us talking about the possibility, Apple went ahead and followed our lead and introduced a 16-inch MacBook Pro.
We're so good to them, aren't we? You know, we tell them what to do. They follow our lead. Are you mixing up Apple with me?
Something like that.
What you say?
In any case,
fair enough.
This is the largest display in Apple's current MacBook range, but it is not the largest display that Apple has ever put on a laptop.
I used to have a 17-inch MacBook I would have had?
Yeah.
I can't imagine carrying that boat around with me now, but at the time, as my sole Mac, that was an excellent machine.
Yeah. Now, if you think about it, right, they've in the modern era of Mac laptops, they've had the MacBook Air 11-inch.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a 12-inch.
Yes.
They've had a 13-inch.
My personal favorite, yes.
We'd have to go back to the iBook line, pull out a 14-inch laptop, but we could.
Oh, I'd forgotten about those. Okay.
Yes. And then, of course, a 15-inch, a 16-inch, mm-hmm. and 17-inch. If you want to go back even further, we could go back way back to an early Mac portable laptop, which had a 10-inch screen.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Yes. I'm trusting with that. I remember the screen. I don't ever remember knowing the size of it.
And of course, you could say 9.7-inch iPad, since Apple considers it to be a computer as well. I think Apple are cowards and need to introduce an 18-inch laptop.
Okay. Why not an 18-inch iPad?
Also good.
So they should do both.
A coffee table, basically, yes.
All right, so next week I should have bought the new 16-inch MacBook Pro, but Apple should have brought out an 18-inch version.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So,
right, anything else you need them to do?
Not especially, no.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. More likes to be reasonable with these things.
Any case.
Tell me about the screen, actually, because you'll know this better than I do. I know it's obviously a bigger screen, 16-inch, and it actually is 16-inch. It's not 15.8 or something. I don't know whether the resolution is the same as it was in the 15,
nope.
And it's just a bit stretched.
Nope.
It's brand new resolution.
Nope. So, well, there are two ways you can do this, right? You can make an entirely new panel with entirely different pixel sizes, right? And in that way, you get the same resolution. But that turns out to be not very efficient. If you're making big panels, and people do make big panels, then you cut them for the size screen you need. In that case, you know, these panels aren't identical, right? They don't have the same pixel density. So the 15-inch MacBook Pro is a 220 pixels per inch, and the 16-inch is a 226 pixels per inch, which means there are 6 more pixels jammed in there.
Cool.
Per inch. So it's not the exact same screen. It's not the exact same display. And by virtue of having more pixels jammed in per inch, within that 16-inch display, you now get a resolution of 3072 by 1920.
So it's bigger and will have a higher resolution. It is therefore in every way better.
As a display goes, it is better.
Okay.
Now, whether
what's the brightness like?
The same brightness, 500 nits.
My iPhone seems to be fighting me on brightness. I like it quite bright, and I often find it's just, calm down, William. It's had and knocked it down.
Have you disabled that part where it adjusts dynamically to ambient light?
No, come on. Why would I do that? I'd forgotten about that bit.
If you were totally into brightness, I'd think you might. But these machines, right? Just looking at the two spec lists, okay, we can notice some difference with the screen resolution and pixel density. The processors are, without looking at specific Intel model numbers, look similar. You know, 2.6 gigahertz, 6-core i7, same across both. 2.3 gigahertz, 8-core i9, same across both. 2.4 gigahertz, 8-core i9, same across both. The RAM specs change a little bit, where before it was 2,400 megahertz DDR4 and could only address 32 gig. And I say only when I'm talking about 32 gig. Obviously, that was a big push to get to 32 gig. Here, it's 2,666 megahertz DDR4 with up to 64 gig as the upper limit.
Oh, no, actually, I did not realize that. So these new MacBooks can go to 64 gigs. I'm never going to be able to afford that.
64 gigs of RAM with slightly faster RAM, yeah. Yeah.
Do we know if the RAM is user updatable?
I would suspect not. Nothing about these machines is user updatable anymore.
No. One can hope, though. Can't one?
No.
What am I thinking of trying to get RAM from somewhere other than Apple? Can't imagine why I would do that. But apparently it's pointless if I try. So
It is anymore. The internal graphics is an Intel UHD Graphics 630 chip set across both of them. The discrete graphics have been updated. Before, they were the 555X, 560X, Pro Vega, Radeon Pro Vega 20 kind of series. And now there's the 5300M and 5550M and 5500M series.
All right, the classics, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Storage has pretty much doubled. Formerly, you could get a model as low as 256 gig. That lower limit is now 512. And instead of ending at 4 terabytes, you can now get an 8 terabyte.
Wow, okay.
Yep.
I'm very conscious about space because in both my iPhone XS Max and my Mac Mini, I went for the base model because I couldn't afford anymore. But it really been punishing on both. And it was a driver to go for the iPhone 11. I went for 256 instead of 64 on that. And it's quite nice. I feel like I can breathe out a bit more.
Absolutely. Battery life is slightly improved. You get 11 hours instead of 10. The weight has gone up. So it was formerly 4.02 pounds and is now 4.3 pounds.
Okay, I can wear that.
In real life, yeah, you're probably not going to notice a whole lot, because if you're carrying your 96-watt power adapter that this thing requires, you've already added that much weight to your bag. But for people who are very, very keen on having the ultimate amount of power in a laptop, but also lightweight, they might complain about this extra, 0.28 pounds. A quarter of a pound, guys, come on. Same FaceTime HD camera, same headphone jack. Yes, you still get a headphone jack. Six speakers with force-canceling woofers with Dolby Atmos, and three mics with directional beamforming.
I don't know what what was the thing you just said? Force-canceling?
Woofers.
What? Woofers.
They make the low sound.
Okay. And cancel it out again.
Well, so this is an interesting thing. When you want to, you don't want to have vibrations that aren't sound. You want to have the vibrations that you're hearing and feeling be that of sound. And so if you have low-end sounds, woofers, take more power and have to push a little harder in order to push sound that you can hear, right? Especially if it's low-end sound. And so one of the things that you can do is arrange them in such a way that... Like if you took in a speaker enclosure, you took two woofers and you put them either face to face or front to back, and had one of them out of phase, kind of thing, then you'd have a push pull arrangement where they, instead of vibrating an enclosure or closed enclosure by sucking air and trying to push air and stuff like that, you just move air. They're more efficient. And they also don't cause the enclosure to vibrate. So it's not entirely sure, because I haven't seen an internal picture yet of how they've laid things out in there. But it's possible that that's what their goal is to try and make the speakers be more efficient. And by doing this force cancellation, we'll do that.
That's quite impressive, actually.
I mean, more efficient speakers mean less power required to make the same amount of sound. And that's, on the whole, a good thing.
Yes, it is.
It's one of those sorts of holy grails of speaker design. Interestingly, Wi-Fi remains 802.11ac instead of moving to the AX standard.
Yes, I was surprised at that, and I don't really appreciate the difference. I presume AX is faster. Why would they compromise on that? Is there an obvious reason I'm missing?
Well, AX is very early. We're starting to see AX routers pop up. But the client devices aren't all there yet. Now, I think the iPhone does move to AX, but
yes, I think
the laptop is not, and it's it could be down to a supply issue. It could be down to the early days part of Wi-Fi where. The standard is still there and is formalized, but maybe chipsets aren't efficient enough yet, or who knows? There are reasons why it could still be early days for that. The difficulty that I have with that is that when you buy a MacBook Pro, do you buy it for 1 year or do you buy it for multiple years? And, if you're a professional and you resell your computer every year to buy the next new model, then I suppose it doesn't matter. But if you are buying for 6 years of use, that's quite a long time.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure what you can do about that, though, really. You just have to, always have to buy the best thing that's available at the time, don't you? Although you can then immediately regret it, such as if I could have done, I would have bought a 13-inch MacBook Pro earlier this year. And now I'm wondering whether Apple will keyboard up this one, and I should wait. I mean, I have to wait, but I spend all my money because of you on the phone. Let's just remind you of that. Eventually you've got to take the plunge. I mean,
Yeah.
Mind you, I do know a friend who went to buy an iMac. He spent ages discussing it and working it out and calculating what he needed and getting just the right budget. And he happened to walk into the Apple store on the day Apple upgraded everything. So, you know, he was very pleased with his purchase that day. Sure. And he might not have been the day before. But,
yeah. Well, the day before he exercises the 14-day return policy.
Okay, he might not have been so pleased 15 days before.
Yeah. But even 15 days before, you can appeal to the good nature of the Apple Store manager and they'll arrange it.
Okay, 20 days before.
It's, no, you're not going to win this one. Never mind. But
was I not going to? I thought
in
I was
any case,
on a roll there.
You know, I counted off how the processors were the same frequencies. It is worth noting that the 16-inch version has a 9th generation Core i9 as opposed to the previous 8th generation. So the processors offer a slightly better performance, or generally better performance. And it's going to take us a little while to actually get a handle on how good these things are. And then obviously they're good, right? You know, laptops. We like them. We like MacBook Pros. But the real contention, I think, that's worth talking about is that thing we began with, the Magic Keyboard. This has been a bone of contention for a lot of MacBook Pro users. Now, we had data, we had information that basically said that even though Apple felt compelled to create a repair program and felt compelled to create a repair program for recently announced models that had the Butterfly keyboard, that in terms of actual numbers of users suffering with this problem, that on the whole, for the amount of numbers of machines sold, it was quite small. Now, obviously, there were people that did suffer this problem and had this problem repeatedly, so much so that they were told on the third or fourth time that it happened that they were no longer able to take advantage of the warranty program.
Goodness.
Okay. Which seems ridiculous, since that's exactly what the warranty program exists for.
Yeah. But, and in that case, they couldn't just appeal to the management, like you said, I could with the 15-day thing.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to say this, actually, I like the Butterfly keyboard. I have not used one for more than an hour or two at a time. I have no real in-depth experience on any of the models, but every time I have used it, I really like it on the 13-inch MacBook, and for some reason, and who knows why, I don't like it on the 15, but I like it on the 13. I'd be happy with that one.
Yeah. So,
keyboards are very personal things.
They are, they are. Now, Phil Schiller, Vice President of Worldwide Marketing for Apple, said that this keyboard and that this MacBook Pro has been in development for some years, that they view it as a pro customer option, and that they've been working on it alongside the iterations of the Butterfly mechanism that saw complaints. And so Schiller told CNET, the Butterfly keyboard had some things that it did really well, like creating a much more stable key platform. It felt more flat and firm under your finger, which some people really liked, but other people weren't really happy with that. We got sort of a mixed reaction. We had some quality issues we had to work on. Over the years, we've been refining that keyboard, and a lot of people are much happier. Nonetheless, he says, the most passionate feedback about the keyboard was from what he called pro customers. So they decided to work on this new keyboard for the MacBook Pro. And he says, as we started to investigate specifically what pro users most wanted, he said, a lot of times they would say, I want something like this Magic keyboard. I love that keyboard. And so the team has been working on this idea of taking that core technology and creating the MacBook keyboard for the pro notebooks. He said that they're continuing with both keyboard designs. He did not say which is going to take precedence, or if one will replace the other. And obviously he can't really say that, because if he tells people, yeah, we're going with this new keyboard across the whole product line, then people will simply stop buying those other products, which is never good.
And if he says, yeah, that Butterfly keyboard, that just didn't work, did it? We've ditched that rubbish. I think the people who bought things might have phone calls to lawyers or something in their near future. So, yes, he can only say what he can only say, of course.
Yeah. What's interesting is that a lot of people go back to Steve Jobs' quotes, where Steve Jobs used to insist that they never did marketing surveys. Mm-hmm. And would also insist that they never did product development by survey, and think that this is a big change by consulting pro users to ask what they want in terms of a keyboard. And I can tell you that's not the case. I got into a Twitter discussion with a former Apple employee about this, who insisted that Steve would never have done this. This would never happen in the Jobs era. And in fact, it did happen in the Jobs era, that at least one instance that I know of was where Apple had third party, had contracted usability studies from usability agencies to survey users about trackpads and trackpad feel and trackpad response, and ask them to do a number of tasks with the trackpad, and then used that information to decide which trackpad to ship and what software driver tuning to ship for that trackpad, which is using usability studies to decide product development. And that happened with a PowerBook G4 that I know of. And so it's what I come down to is there are a lot of things that Jobs said that weren't necessarily so behind the scenes. They made for great things to say. Like, you know, Jobs also told everyone that no one needed to have a iPod that played video, and then went ahead and introduced the iPod fifth generation that played video.
And that nobody reads anymore, just before he brought out the iBook stuff. Yes,
right. I remember so that. There are a number of occasions where Jobs would say something and then in the background know that that wasn't how things were being done.
God, he was a wag, wasn't he?
A little bit. But, you know, at the same time, just as we talk about, Schiller knows whether or not they're going to update the rest of the product line with this magic keyboard. But he's not going to tell us. He's not going to tell us.
I heard an interview with him about the MacBook Pro where he was talking about the fact that how good it feels to finally be able to talk about something that for a long time he's known this will be the answer to certain things, and he's not been allowed to say that. It's his job not to say, and of course it is, and he accepts that just as we do. But the feeling of release now that he can talk about it seemed very palpable when he was describing it.
Absolutely. It's true. And there's always pride. That's one of the best points, is the pride in being able to release a good product to the world and finally tell people about it.
Yes. Yes. It still staggers me that any company, not just Apple, can do as much as they do. I mean, I was thinking this when you mentioned the speakers and stuff, the level of detail needed to produce one device. It's utterly fascinating.
Oh, I've been on that side of product development, and yeah, it takes about 9 months to get any product made, even if it's a simple product. You know, obviously cases can move a little bit faster, but if you've got electronics involved, it takes that amount of time just to get something made. It's hard to do it faster, especially if you want to do it right. For a product like a phone, we know it takes about 2 years. For a laptop, I forget what the timeline is, but it takes real time to build these things.
Impressive.
It does.
And I always think I'm busy, but then you hear about people doing all of this stuff, and it's a bit sobering.
Well, and this is true for a lot of different fields. For example, I want to talk about Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is sponsoring this show, and Mack Weldon founded themselves because they wanted to figure out they wanted more out of basic clothing items. They really wanted to have a simpler way to buy things. This frustration was all over, where they were surrounded by all of this, a mind-numbing assortment of clothing, and realized that consistency of fit and quality was just taking a chance on things. So they started from scratch and engineered their own fabric. And you know, we talk about computers and things like that, but the concept of engineering your own fabric is a little out there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the result is that what they're making is probably better than whatever you're wearing right now.
Oh, okay. That seems a little harsh, but all right. I dressed up.
We began this show by talking about manipulating your purchases. I'm helping you here.
Yeah. I'm wearing a tie, you know.
Right, but is it poly?
I'm not actually wearing a tie. I didn't figure you'd check. Thank you. Well, I also didn't think you'd really press. Actually, I thought I'd get away with that, but yeah. Okay.
So they're a premium men's essentials brand, and they believe in smart design and premium fabrics and simple shopping. And, you know, I have gone through and over time replaced all of my t-shirts with their t-shirts because the fabric is incredible. It's a Pima cotton and they have a silver fabric. And I just love the feel and the fit. And I'm really sensitive when I feel stitching that doesn't feel comfortable or I feel fabric that doesn't feel comfortable. And theirs just does. They've just focused on every seam and I like it. And they say that they're the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, and hoodies and stuff like that you'll ever wear. And my experience says, yeah, that's true. And they have a line of the silver thread, silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which is nice, very comfortable. And they want you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear that you'd ordered from them, you can keep it and they will refund you, no questions asked. And not only do they look good, they perform well too. So as I said, I've replaced pretty much all of my t-shirts with them and I'm very happy. For 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com. Enter promo code AppleInsider. And, you know, if you ever do have any of their stuff, feel free to email me and just tell me how much you liked it. I am a fan. Speaking of Phil Schiller, so one of the things that Phil Schiller did was he also was giving that interview to CNET. And... Mm-hmm. He mentioned that he was asked to comment on education, the education market, and especially Chromebook's rapid adoption in education. And he said iPad is doing really well. And then he said something that really caught my ear. Now, you remember a couple of weeks ago we had on...
Fraser, too.
Yes, Fraser Spears.
From iPads to Chromebooks, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, Fraser Spears, the head teacher of the Cedars School of Excellence, who had run a one-to-one iPad program for years in his school, and it switched to Chromebooks and Google Classroom. We talked about that, and we talked about how Google maintains a separate data privacy for the education customers so that the student data is not subject to all of the data gathering that that Google normally would do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Schiller said, kids who are really into learning and want to learn will have better success. Okay, I agree with that so far. He said,
yes.
It's not hard to understand why kids aren't engaged in a classroom without applying technology in a way that inspires them.
Yes, I feel you're building to something here.
I am. Yes, I'm just part by part reading through. So for Schiller, you have to have cutting edge technology to inspire kids to learn. Given that I grew up in classrooms without cutting edge technology, did we not learn, William? Are we uneducated?
Have you ever listened to me for more than 2 minutes? Of course I learned nothing. And he's absolutely right. I needed more than a BBC Micro to get me through my days. And I have let down myself, really, by not learning from... an iPad. Is it going to be an iPad that I have to get?
I don't know. But, I mean, I had exposure to Apple IIe in fourth grade. So I guess maybe I learned a little bit. But that was the end of my educational career right there.
I can never follow the years and things, even here in the UK. What year is fourth grade? How old would you have been then?
I was 9 or 10.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Works out your age from the Apple IIe.
Let's keep going here. Filler went on to say, you need to have these cutting-edge learning tools to help kids really achieve their best results. Chromebooks don't do that. Chromebooks have gotten to the classroom because, frankly, they're cheap testing tools for required testing. If all you want to do is test kids, well, maybe a cheap notebook will do that. But they're not going to succeed.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. So a lot of people read this as that last word, that last sentence, but they're not going to succeed, as kids aren't going to succeed if they have Chromebooks.
Okay.
The other way
you're
that you...
You're about to say what I was confused there, and you're going to confuse me.
Right. The other way that you could take that sentence is to say the but there refers to cheap notebooks. Cheap notebooks are not going to succeed.
That's what I thought. Yes.
But But it's a fair reading to say that that refers to the kids, because the opening sentence of his quote was, kids who are willing to learning and want to learn will have better success. So we're talking about kids' success, and kids who have Chromebooks are not going to succeed.
Okay, that seems harsh. I'm not really a Chromebook fan, but he was right about them being cheap, though, wasn't he?
Cheaper. They're affordable, but they're not necessarily cheap.
I thought that was the raison d'etre of a Chromebook originally, at least.
They're not necessarily cheaply made. Some of them are, some of them aren't. There are a variety of them out there. Some of them are quite rugged. Some of them are quite robust. And some of them aren't affordable at all. There's a range. Well, when Google Pixel goes for $600 to $1,000, depending on which year we're talking about, they aren't cheap in any respect. But the thing that's interesting is that I don't think Phil has had actual experience with Google Classroom. Because Classroom is not a testing regime at all. Google Classroom is honestly a way of eliminating the paper agenda and teachers writing assignments on the board. It's about assigning out classwork and then having a way for students to submit classwork back for grading. You know, if you're being assigned to write a paper as a student, you write that paper in a Google Doc and then link that Google Doc back into Classroom, and the teacher then grades
similar
it.
Similar to what Apple does. I can't remember what it's called. This Apple education thing that does exactly this.
Apple education thing doesn't do that. The Apple education thing was more focused on how to use Apple Clips and other things as a part of curriculum.
So really, Google, I seem to remember being quite a lot of educational. There's some sort of program for teachers at Apple, aren't there? I'm reaching back a couple of years, and I've not been a teacher. I don't know.
But so there was the Chicago event There was the Chicago event 2 years ago, where they showcased iPads in classrooms, and that was the last time they really talked about it in any meaningful way. And it was demonstrating curriculum-based assignment. It was trying to help fit the iPad into the curriculum.
No, I mean,
it didn't do any kind
rather of an event, some kind of annual rowing program, very similar to the entrepreneur camp. I know there was one, I just can't remember the name of it or when it was last mentioned.
Yeah, they don't really do anything for the simple management of the you know assignments and things like that. The Google Classroom is really good at that. Apple took an entirely different direction. It doesn't try and do the same thing at all.
Okay.
And so Phil goes on to say, you know, every child has the ability to succeed. Helping them do that has always been our mission. This is actually, he went and tried to fix it in a tweet. So people were upset at him saying kids weren't going to succeed. And so he wrote a tweet that says, every child has the ability to succeed. Helping them to do that has been our mission. We discussed giving kids and teachers the content, curriculum, and tools they need to explore and grow, not just take a test. So he's still harping on the idea that Classroom is only about taking a test, which it's not. And you know, laying out that Apple is about giving kids and teachers content, curriculum, and tools. And that's true. Their focus has been on trying to augment the curriculum as opposed to helping the teacher with their existing curriculum.
Okay.
So I think personally I'm giving Phil negative points for this one. He screwed up and tried to fix it in a tweet, but then managed to land on not just take a test, which is still not the truth about what Google Classroom does. And if you want to bash Google, that's great. That's fine. But we should do it honestly based on what they can and can't do.
We want informed bashing.
You know, if you want to say that the Google privacy policy for Classroom is such where if you do single sign-on with Google stuff within Classroom and within Google apps, you're protected by their privacy. But the minute you step outside that, you're no longer protected by Google's privacy for school students. If you want to say that Chromebooks that run Android apps are a risk because even if you're protected by Google's policy for the Chromebook and Google's own web apps, that as soon as you go to an Android app, you lose it, fine, totally reasonable. If you want to talk about how a lot of classroom management apps that schools opt for in addition to Google Classroom, like Hapara Highlights, are used to spy on students' screens, then you can talk about things like that, or activate the webcam remotely. You know, there's a room to talk about things, but talk about what they actually do. And for heaven's sakes, Phil, get some experience with Google Classroom so you can talk knowledgeably about it.
Yeah, Phil Schiller talks up his own product. A lot of other people have done the same. I agree, it wasn't right.
No, he should talk up his own product, but he should talk it up based on what the actual differences are. You know, it's one thing. You lose credibility with me when you bash something without knowing about it, or when you bash it untruthfully. That's where I stand.
Okay.
So there.
I didn't know any of that stuff, particularly about him picking it up on the tweet. That's hinting. This is another courageous moment of his, isn't it?
Okay.
I still feel we haven't talked me into buying a 16-inch MacBook Pro, and apart from the mere financial aspect, I'm really close.
It's a slow burn. We're going to get there.
Okay.
In other Apple news, there was a lot of criticism on Twitter about Apple Card.
Yes. Is it the wrong color? I wanted one in blue.
It is not the wrong color. And if you really want one in blue, you can have one anodized.
Yeah, it's not the same. Okay.
So an entrepreneur on Twitter, username DHH is David Heinemeier Hansen, basically let loose a series of tweets that said that he was granted a credit limit 20 times higher than that of his wife. They live in a community property state, therefore his assets are hers.
Okay, I've not heard that term before. Community property estate. Okay.
Presumably their histories are different. So states within the U.S. we are a federation of states, and so states get to make their own laws and own rules, and so the state law says that's a community property state, that one spouse owns, the other spouse owns. And this is reasonably normal. This is pretty typical. And so he applied and got a credit limit 20 times higher than that of his wife, and went on saying that there was no reason for it, because for every other thing that they've applied for, that his wife got ratings similar to his, or got credit limits similar to his. Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, chimed in saying that he had a similar situation where for all of his other cards, his wife got the same or better, and that for Apple Card, his wife also got significantly less credit extended to them. A number of people piled on saying that this is sexist. Now, it's possible.
It's also two examples.
There are lots more. Let's be clear.
Is it tens, hundreds, thousands?
It's a big thread.
It's unlikely to be a significant percentage of the people who've applied, which doesn't mean that it hasn't happened or that those other people haven't got it. But so far, we have a very small sample statistically.
Right.
And I am concerned because I know with my wife's situation and mine, I'm the guy who keeps buying iPhones and stuff. My credit rating stinks and hers is perfect. I could see a difference even though we're in the same household. So I don't want it to be sexist, but I want to get there knowing that it is before we start.
And we should talk about a couple of instances. So for some things here, there were people saying that their wife had higher credit scores than they did, and their credit score and we're still extended less credit, which is, again, an anecdote. So what we need to discuss a little bit about is what makes for a good credit applicant. Who is the ideal customer for this thing?
Angela.
Well,
there
maybe.
You go. That was quick.
But there's only one of
Who's
her.
Who's the worst? Me. Well, yes. Yeah, that's true. I would definitely
and,
say
And
that,
thankfully
yes.
for us, there's only one of you. But
I think it's one too many, but, you know, we can discuss that separately.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I want to say is that credit scores are just one part of what's looked at when you apply for credit, right? The other thing that's looked at is your credit utilization and how quickly you pay back, or how do you maintain a zero balance? Do you pay off every month? And, you know, contrary to your belief, you'd think good financial habits like paying off every month or maintaining a zero balance or not overusing, not having a high utilization would make you a good customer for credit, right? Those would be the people they'd want to extend limits to because...
No, how would they make money if I pay off at the time? You don't want people to be defaulting, but there's somewhere in the middle, isn't there?
Exactly.
Prime.
Exactly. So you want people who are carrying a balance because then you're making money on interest.
Yes, yes. And late fees in some cases, though, obviously not in Apple Card's case. Yeah.
Right. Apple Card proudly boasts that they have no fees. But yeah, there we go. So after all of this, Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon, he's a ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee, said that he's investigating the veracity of Apple Card bias claims. So there he's announcing an investigation. Goldman, of course, facing this investigation, and also they're facing one from the New York Department of Financial Services, said that we have not and never will make decisions based on factors like gender. We do not know your gender or marital status during the Apple Card application process. He said that customers who felt slighted by the process could ask for a reevaluation, and the bank would fulfill based on additional information that they request. Elizabeth Warren was not exactly happy with that. She told Bloomberg in an interview, "Yeah, that's great. Let's just tell every woman in America you might have been discriminated against on an unknown algorithm, and it's on you to telephone Goldman Sachs and tell them to straighten it out." And she says, "Sorry, guys, that's not how it works." So,
you're quite right. Yes.
Warren called on Goldman to produce information about how their algorithm is designed and how it impacts applicants. And if it's unable to do so, she says the bank needs to pull it down.
Oh, see, that's curious. I wonder if one imagines that all credit card companies use the same algorithms because it's the same job and stuff. So that means Goldman's is proprietary, which means they're not going to release it.
Well, this is one of the difficulties is that, you know, when we talked about Equifax a couple of years ago, I never asked Equifax to keep a record on me. They just do, right? Unlike with Facebook, right? If it's signed up with a Facebook account, you asked for a Facebook to track you. Facebook maintains shadow accounts that you never asked for. So credit agencies are just like Facebook in that respect, where they maintain these files on you that you never asked for. And you get no insight into how they compose them or anything on them. The only thing you are able to do is challenge information if they have information wrong.
Okay, but they never said they were maintaining these things for us. They're doing it for credit companies, so it might not like it, but it doesn't seem surprising.
Yeah. Well, so but here's the real point. The real point is that we're beginning to understand that algorithms are really only as good as the data gets put into them and the biases that they're programmed with from the people that programmed them. Algorithms aren't just computers and they're a black box and we can never change them. Algorithms come from people.
Yes.
And people are imperfect, which means that algorithms are imperfect. And so
can we do
burn the algorithms.
Okay. Well, given my credit state, that wouldn't make a difference to me, but I can see it being globally quite an impact. Yes.
There is a history and a field of work about algorithms and the biases that are there. You know, there are books that have been written. Sophia Noble wrote Algorithms of Oppression, Pop Tech Works, Virginia Eubanks wrote Automating Inequality, Mar Hicks wrote Programmed Inequality, Rua Benjamin wrote Race After Technology. There are a number of works of journalism, works of research that, you know, Meredith Broussard, who's an NYU associate data professor, data journalist, she wrote the book Artificial Unintelligence, How Computers Misunderstand the World. You know, there's a lot going on here, and we need to understand that these things just aren't fait accompli.
Sure. Do we have any idea what will happen next in this particular case?
Well, there are like the two that I mentioned. There's the New York financial one, and there's the one that Senator Ron Wyden's looking into. And we don't really have an idea what will come out of those, simply that we're going to keep watching them.
Actually, has Apple commented on this? Was it just been Goldman Sachs?
Just Goldman Sachs.
Interesting.
Okay. Yep.
I suppose, you know, it is Goldman Sachs' algorithm, but that's interesting that Apple is choosing not to go there.
Okay. Yeah. This segment is brought to you by Atto. Now, Atto technology is the power behind the storage. Atto technology has been providing Mac users high-performance network and storage connectivity for over 30 years. Atto premium connectivity solutions for Macs include a wide range of low-latency, highly optimized Thunderbolt and PCIe options. Visit Atto.com to discover why Atto is the power behind the storage. And Atto's been doing this, like I said, for over 30 years. The media industry, right? Tons of storage, because you have to if you're doing video. They have solutions for current Macs and the upcoming Mac Pro. They Thunderbolt, host bus, fiber channel, Ethernet adapters. They support current Macs and are ready to unleash all the power of that new Mac Pro. And they have the solutions you need. If you're working with high def, 4K or 8K workflows and need a reliable, high-performance network solution, visit Atto.com because they have it. And we want to thank them for sponsoring this segment. Now, I mentioned Facebook just a moment ago.
Yes, it comes into this program quite a lot, I've realized. I know this one. They've done something else, haven't they?
They have.
Or there's another bug. Is that the way this one goes?
Maybe. What do you think they've done this time?
Bought an awful lot of iPhones that they couldn't afford.
I wish. Okay. Facebook on Wednesday updated their iOS app to address a flaw that inadvertently enabled a user's camera without their knowledge.
Okay.
Facebook is, of course, calling this now fixed problem a bug.
Right. I'm trying to remember whether I've seen something like this. When I've gone to add an image, I'm wondering, I must have given permission for the camera to be used at some point, but I'm wondering if there's a live thing. Have I experienced this as well?
So here's the way this flaw worked, is that if you were browsing account pages or performing actions that are not associated with picture taking or image capture, the camera just inadvertently activated. And a fellow named Joshua Maddox posted evidence of this bug in a tweet on November 9th, demonstrating the live video feed was opened in the Facebook app and hidden behind a photo or other on-screen content. Sliding the foreground panels to the side revealed a small portion of the live feed, which appeared to be captured from the rear-facing camera. And he was able to replicate it on multiple devices using iOS 13.2.2. Previous iOS versions were seemingly unaffected by the bug. What's interesting here is that the app was operating within the iOS sandbox, meaning affected users had previously allowed access to the camera hardware. But unintentional inconspicuous activation of the hardware is a threat.
Okay. It's all perfectly innocent. I don't know what you're talking about. No, it's fine. It just happens. Who knew these things could possibly go on? It's not like they test things or anything, is it?
I don't know what to tell you. I don't.
Okay.
But I do know what to tell you about this. Is your Wi-Fi feeling old?
It is, actually, yes.
Does it buffer while streaming?
Yeah, quite a bit, yes.
Does connecting new devices slow it down?
Well, it's so slow sometimes I'm not sure, but I'm going to go probably with yes.
Can it handle gaming video calls and large file transfers all at once?
I don't play games, so I wouldn't know. But I hear straining from the router, yes?
Yeah. It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is if your Wi-Fi router is old and outdated. It just doesn't. You could have the fastest connection ever, and if your router is old and tired and sad, it won't make a difference. But I want to tell you, with Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Wi-Fi 6, or 802.11.ax, which we talked about before when we were talking about the MacBook Pro, that's the latest technology that allows more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. The result delivers the fastest Wi-Fi for all of your devices anywhere in your home. Stream in HD, 4K, or even 8K without buffering, eliminate lag while gaming, and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class. If you're ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it today from Netgear and never worry about Wi-Fi again. Of course, the best Wi-Fi ever is really, it's Netgear's best Wi-Fi ever. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local BestBuy.com or at netgear.com/bestwifi. That's netgear.com/bestwifi. So this is where I'm torn, William.
Yes.
I'm torn because I'm trying to decide whether I want to push you into getting a MacBook Pro.
Okay.
A new iPad Pro.
Or better clothes, yeah, all right.
Or an iPhone SE 2.
I think I'm probably out of the market for an SE 2 now that I've got an 11. I've made that leap, 11 Pro.
You say that, but you also said I could push you around. So what can I do to convince you?
Actually, I think this is a failure of imagination. Of all the things you could be trying to push me into crime, into scandal, into something exciting. But no, it's just go to the Apple Store.
I have no comment.
Buy
on
Mac Pro. Okay.
Not even doing anything that actually benefits me out of this deal. So I don't know why we're doing this. But Ming-Chi Kuo issued a note, basically saying that the iPhone SE 2 should be expected in the first half of 2020, and that. So we know that's coming, according to him. It's basically reiterating previous forecasts and previously what we knew about it, which is that it's going to be a design similar to the iPhone 8. It's going to be a design similar to the iPhone 8. It will have the A13 Bionic processor, which is the same one that's in the iPhone 11 and 11 Pro. It'll have the 3 GB of RAM, but it'll probably have Touch ID. Expect it to be about $399, come in 64 GB and 128 GB varieties.
The I iPad, always ask this, but yeah. Will there be one in blue?
No.
Seriously, what is the matter with Apple? Okay, yeah.
What's the matter with you in blue?
It's actually a quote from 30 years ago, but let's not go into that.
Okay. Yeah. So, it's the old Henry Ford quote. You can have it any color you like as long as it's black. If we go back to the first part of last century, the iPad Pro is said to debut with new 3D sensing equipment. Similar to the TrueDepth camera, time-of-flight systems generate highly accurate depth maps by calculating light instead of analyzing structured light patterns like the infrared dot patterns from the TrueDepth camera. Time-of-flight modules measure the time it takes pulses of light to travel to and from a target surface. Sort of like sonar for light. Not only is the resulting depth data more accurate, but time-of-flight sensors can operate at longer distances than structured light solutions. Apple's been interested in this since early 2018. We think that this is going to be used for augmented reality applications.
There's a lot going on with AR.
I suppose so.
Yet. Are you? I'm intrigued, but...
Well, so the problem is that beyond the augmented reality version of Minecraft or inserting pretty IKEA furniture into your room, people aren't sure how to use augmented reality yet. Now, Apple has a patent on augmented reality glasses, and they apparently held a meeting with 1,000 people in it to talk about, 1,000 employees in it, to talk about upcoming augmented reality glasses. The technology is cool, right? You know, if you're doing augmented reality glasses, then you use micro-LED displays and things like this to get the brightness up and the power requirements down, and that's very cool. But if you don't know how to use them sensibly, are you expecting that people are going to wear glasses on their face all day when they don't need eyeglasses? That seems awkward.
Although, you're the one who thinks it's now socially acceptable to have AirPods in your ear all the time.
It is, but I'm talking from a comfort standpoint. When I wear sunglasses for more than 30 minutes at a time, my nose hurts. You know, it's one thing if you have to wear eyeglasses and you become used to them. Or it's another thing.
It's socially acceptable as long as it doesn't hurt you. Okay, that's really precise there. I still don't think it's actually acceptable.
You have pinned down exactly what's important here. Thank you for that, William.
Okay, right. We're learning a lot about each other today.
Yes. We are. This has been. We've accomplished a lot here.
Yes, this is a 50-minute hour. We're going to be paying each other for a session.
You know, I think that there's definitely something to augmenting reality. I think augmenting reality through AirPods has made a lot of sense. I wonder what it does for video. We are sort of stuck in this situation where we want to get away from the idea of everyone carrying around a piece of pocket glass. At the same time, strapping things to our face may not be the answer. So I'm not sure where we're going to land on this. But the phone is a square of glass is in danger of becoming a commodity item. People keep saying things like, where's the innovation coming from, Apple?
Yes.
So my thought is that any sort of video goggles are going to end up being a thing like the Apple Watch was, where they don't tell us what you use it for or why you have to have it. They say, here's all the stuff it does, go enjoy. And you have to find out for yourself if it's for you. And then over a period of 2 or 3 years, they develop it further and figure out what it's actually for.
I think that's unusual for Apple, though. Usually, don't they? You know, they're making a notebook to be used as a notebook.
When Jobs used to introduce something, Jobs would say pretty clearly, here's why you want it. Here's what it's for. Here's how it's useful.
True.
And yes. Lay out that. And if you saw yourself in that, then you'd buy one. And with Apple Watch, they didn't do that. You know, if you went into the Apple Store years ago, one of the steps of service for an Apple employee approaching a customer was to ask, to probe, to listen, and then propose a solution.
Yes, which is good.
Which is great. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish? What problem do you want to solve? Here's the thing that'll solve it for you. Have I heard everything you've said? And then, yeah, right? With the watch, initially, they didn't do that. The watch does all these things. Would you like one? And it was a lot harder to know why you needed to have one. And so I used to go around, and any time I'd see someone wearing a smartwatch, I'd say, so what do you use that thing for? And a lot of the times, I found people saying, my employer doesn't allow me to check my phone or carry my phone, but if I'm wearing the watch, I can see the notification.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, we've grown to people using them for health, using them for sport, things like this, to the point where people who formerly would have considered a Garmin sport watch are now considering the Apple Watch or getting the Apple Watch. So we've arrived at a place, and you know, Johnny Ive said something similar. He said, you know, the idea is to not check your phone all the time, but instead to ambiently be able to see what's going on and see if you need to check your phone. We're getting better, but it took us years to get there because it wasn't firmly thought through what it existed for in the first place. And I feel like the glasses are going to be the same thing.
I guess I need to see them do something useful for me. The watch I was drawn to straight away, and who knows why, I can't remember that far back now. I'm very glad I got it, but what I use it for now is not what I thought I'd use it for then, you're right. The glasses seem different. They seem a bigger step than a watch somehow, so we'll see.
We will. And, you know, I want to thank all of our listeners who wrote in talking about both the Apple ID question that I had and also talking about accessibility. We think accessibility is a real big deal, and we're going to keep talking about accessibility, but I didn't want to hit you with it for the third week in a row today.
No, but do keep sending stuff in. I had some really interesting emails from people on both topics. It's been great. Yeah.
Yes, thank you so much. And please join us again next week when we'll tell you all about accessibility. No, we'll have more news then, I'm sure.
What, you think something else is going to happen? No. Apple's done for the year.
Yeah.
There's no more machines coming from Apple in December.
Nothing else can possibly happen at this point. You're right.
This is what I'm thinking.
Okay. Yeah. Well, William, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at an Apple store and on Twitter at WGallagher or Apple, William at appleinsider.com on email. What about you?
I'm VMarks on Twitter. I'm Victor at appleinsider.com. And we'll be back next week. It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is if your Wi-Fi router is old and outdated. With Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Wi-Fi 6 is the latest tech that allows more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/bestwifi. That's netgear.com/bestwifi.